Hey friends, I appreciate you tuning into the Dill Farm Podcast, where I hope you feel at least mildly entertained and possibly even inspired to take big action towards improving your life and your business. On this episode of the Dill Farm, we have the pleasure of talking with Darcy Marlar, an experienced investor that's done a little bit of everything, but has ultimately decided that land development is where it's at. Tune in to hear his story. Kevin, what's shaking, my man?
It is a fantastic day. The weather is phenomenal, and I'm just happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here as well, man.
I'm happy that I can make it. Yeah. Yeah. Did I miss it last time? No, I don't think I've missed any. I'm just happy to be here, man.
You refuse to miss. As much as I try, you just keep coming on.
Yeah. I keep showing up. I keep learning more. One of these days, hey, where's Kevin at? Oh, he's going making $1 million with that last idea that came through here. I tell you, it's so tempting. It really, each of these ideas that come through, it's like, man, that's a good approach, man. I want to try that.
Well, there's so many. That's the beautiful thing about real estate. There's so many niches and so many ways to make money at this. You just got to pick one or two and just buckle down and just do it. And then when you get bored, then you shift to something else. And actually, that's kind of, it's a little bit of a teaser for this interview we have with Darcy. That was sort of his thing, actually, not to spoil this, but he kind of like me a little bit, where you do a little bit of everything and you get a little bit bored and you want to keep trying stuff. I mean, it's very much this guy.
You know, and it's funny because, you know, I actually wasn't here when you recorded this video, because while you were talking to Mr. Darcy, I was with my wife celebrating our anniversary at watching Pride and Prejudice at a theater. And so I had a time with my own Mr. Darcy.
Your own Mr. Darcy. That's hilarious. We might as well just be intellectually honest with our audience. It's a pre-recorded interview. Let's be honest.
It's all recorded. Even this is recorded. And so sometimes it's before, sometimes it's after.
That's true.
I was on an anniversary trip with my wife, and we did go see the theater and saw Mr. Darcy. And just how appropriate that while I was out, you were talking to Mr. Darcy.
Who would have thought? And I'm not going to lie, when I saw the name on the schedule, it's like, oh, Darcy, that's our cousin. We have a cousin, Darcy.
Cousin Darcy, that's
not
right.
Not a male Darcy, though. This is male, not a female Darcy.
Yeah, and this is a Mr. Darcy.
I actually really, really enjoyed this conversation, this interview, because his trajectory is kind of similar to mine, I feel like, where he's done a lot of different things and kind of where he's landed today. It's probably true for a lot of investors too, at least full-time investors that have been at this, tried a lot of different things. And it's funny, the theme, I feel like there's a common thread that people over time eventually simplify.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they try it all. They do a lot. They do a lot of volume. They burn out a little bit. They find an easier way to be profitable at things.
Mm-hmm. And maybe do less and make more and be happier.
That's exactly what it is. That's a good title for a book. Do less,
make more,
be happier.
Be happier. There you go.
I say we write that down.
Let's write that book.
That's a book title. It's funny. I had breakfast with some of my buddies this morning, and we were talking about the boat. I think maybe you and I even had this conversation in the last podcast that we're going to get the boat. Well, we got the boat.
Yeah, you got the boat.
And we were just talking about, you know, when you're wake surfing behind the boat, you know, one of the first goals you want to get to is dropping the rope so that you're not being held by the rope anymore. You're just truly surfing behind the boat. And I was like, that is a great book title. Drop the rope. Somebody can write a book.
It's funny because the first thing that comes to my mind is kids in college. Hey, bud, it's time to drop the rope.
Time to drop the rope. Yeah. You're an adult now. You don't need my help anymore. Drop the rope.
It's all on you, man. All on you. Just ride that wave now.
I feel like there's a lot of metaphors, a lot of application that you could write drop the rope. The drop the rope book for.
What's the first one that comes to mind? Like for me, it was immediately, it was adult children, man, time to drop the rope. Time to launch. What about for you? That's season of life I'm in.
Yeah. And drop the rope. I don't know, I feel like it could be a self-help book. It could be a spiritual book. Mm-hmm. Just what is the Jesus take the wheel? Drop the rope.
Jesus is driving the boat. Jesus, it's time for me to drop the rope.
Time for me to drop the rope. Jesus, take the wheel.
That's exactly. We got to write that book.
Write that book, yeah. All right. That's the next book we're writing is Drop the Rope. Either that or wait, what was the other one that we just came up with?
Do less, make more.
Be happy.
Be happy. Yeah.
We got two good books coming out of this podcast.
Forget podcasts, man. We just need to start writing books.
Yeah, what are we doing? Although I did write a book. I've sold lots of copies.
Yeah.
And my royalty check is maybe buys me a cup of coffee every week.
Yeah. You know, I told
don't make
you,
a lot of money in books. They're not a lot of money.
I get a royalty check for the dissertation that I wrote.
What? Amazing.
Yeah. I get a regular, that's not, you know, it's enough to go out and eat to dinner, but not a lot of money. You don't make a lot of money getting PhDs and writing dissertations.
No. Even writing books, you got to sell a crap ton of books to make. It's all about opening up speaking gigs and selling courses and whatever else. That's what books open doors is what they do.
So did Mr. Darcy write a book? I'm really eager now to meet this guy.
He did not write a book that I know of, but he does have a course. He does actually, he does train on something that I think super applicable in terms of development and subdividing property. And it's, let's, how about this? Rather than me teeing it up, why don't we just play the interview?
Bring him in.
All right.
Bring him in.
So Darcy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I love doing these. This is great. Nice to meet you.
Well, it's always fun to interview a Canadian. So you're in Calgary, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
And so you've obviously been in this for a number of years. I'm just curious, so are you primarily an investor on the Canadian side of the border or on the U.S. side of the border?
Almost entirely U.S. now. I kind of joke that after 23 years of doing all the different strategies, I don't know that Canada has too much left to teach me. So my own personal growth, let's see what I can do.
That's funny. You got bored in Canada. Like, let's see what we can do over in the U.S.
Exactly. Yeah. So
that's awesome. Well, give me maybe the quick rundown. You've been at this 23 years. What's sort of been the evolution of your business?
So yeah, I was, I started out doing flips and then a couple of those didn't sell. And so I guess I'm a landlord now. And that's how that started. And then I had the opportunity to, one of my flips, the guy next to me passed away. So I bought it too. Well, this is an opportunity I always wanted to build. So I tore down both homes and split those two lots into four and built four new homes. Hey, I like this. And so over the last 23 years, I've done everything. So I've had 240 rental units, 1,000 tenants. I've built 46 single family homes, duplexes, small multifamilies, land developments of all sizes. I was instrumental in getting a horse track and casino built and flips and burrs and condo conversions, you name it. I've kind of done it. So.
You've done it all. Well, so what was that entry point for you then? What, did you leave a day job to get into real estate? And what did that look like?
So I used to be a computer guy, like an IT guy. A ton of people in real estate and used to be IT guys. I don't know what's about that. But from 96 to 2001, I actually lived and worked full-time in South America. Oh, so wow. Venezuela, Colombia, Mexico, Brazil. My wife's Venezuelan. My kids were born in Caracas. I just got burnt out. I didn't want to see a computer again. I'd always wanted to get into real estate. I started in my teens kind of looking at it. So this is the chance. I had a little bit of a nest egg saved up, came back home and started, like I said, started doing flips. So that was the inspiration was I just didn't want to do computers anymore. So.
I'm sure that is resonates with a lot of people who are driving, you know, back and forth to the 9-to-5s and they're like, I don't want to be in this job anymore. Yeah. What does real estate look like? And so you just sort of dipped your toes in the water, flipped a couple houses, and I'm guessing you were hooked.
Didn't dip my toe in the water. I came back. I bought my personal house for cash and then got a line of credit so that tax wise I can do that. And then I just went out and bought three flips, never done it before. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm going to, you know, like going to the Home Depot and picking up day crews. And I'd never done that before. And all of a sudden, I didn't dip my toe in the water. I dove head first.
Baptism by fire. That's what, yeah. Did you read a book? Did you, I mean, back and really, you know, back then there wasn't a whole lot of courses and stuff out there. I mean, you figured this out.
Yeah. Back in the day before the internet, you know, you'd write a book, the guru would write a book and then, you know, I'm going to be in your town for the Friday night thing. And that's really to get you to go to the weekend seminar. And then that's to get you to buy the cassette tape course. And then, you know, the late night infomercials and all that. Yeah. That's kind of where I was when I started. So actually my realtor had done some of this and so he was kind of my mentor in that. But as I got into development and new construction, yeah, I was kind of totally on my own there. I didn't, so it's
just
a little crazy there.
Winging it a little bit.
Yeah.
That's what a lot, I mean, that's where most of us, you know, just cut our teeth, just doing it and just, you get your education kind of in the field and on the fly.
You can learn a lot from mentoring and education. It kind of speeds up the learning process, but eventually, you gotta commit and just let's go do something.
Yeah. So how did it come about that you did so many different things? Were you just one of those guys, an opportunity came across your desk? You're like, this looks interesting. Let's figure this space out.
I get bored real easy, right? So just about the time you know, I kind of figured out flips, what my margins were, what it was going to take for time and cost. Okay, no, now there's opportunity, like I said, tear down these two houses and build something new. So it wasn't so much shiny trinket. It was I just love to learn. And so it's better if you focus. I'll tell your listeners right now, there's a benefit to just getting really good at something.
Yeah.
So all of this has given me all this experience and knowledge to write. You know, I've written 4 books on real estate investing. I got a course now, so it helps with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I've done very well monetarily too, but I probably would have done better if I'd focused on something over the years. But is what it is.
Sometimes you just want to do what you want to do, though. I get that. I'm the same way. And I think entrepreneurs are a lot of times just wired that way. Like, we kind of just want to do what we want to do, and you get bored with something and you want to try something new.
You know, there's that Robert Frost poem, you know, the path diverged in the woods and I took the path less chosen. I've got a twist on that. I say when life gives you a path, take the one that'll give you the better story. So I've got some pretty cool stories.
There you go. Well, so, you know, I guess your story's kind of landed you more on the development side of things. Maybe take me through that progression. You had obviously built up a nice rental portfolio. You flipped a lot of houses. What kind of led you away from that? Was it really just boredom or just kind of tired of the change?
I was so, you know, just like I kind of got burnt out with the computers. I kind of got burnt out by doing this. I wasn't happy, right? And I think as an industry, you know, everybody's got courses and books to sell. So we get you into a room and this group is focused on teaching people how to do rentals. Like, okay, if that's your first entry into the real estate world, I guess you're starting with rentals, right? Or flips or whatever. So my first thing was flips, and I did it. And then I started doing some rentals, but I never enjoyed the rental journey. I never liked that. When you get up to a certain amount of scale, it's just, you know, there's always somebody moving out and always somebody moving in. And you know, you got property management companies, but they don't really help much, to be honest with you. So it just never gave me any joy. So like 2018, 2019, I was kind of really depressed. I wasn't happy. The flips, the new construction, I was my own on-site supervisor. Mm-hmm. So I literally went to Home Depot every day for like 17 years. Like, so, and that just gets to you, you know, you're dealing with nasty sometimes. Like, I called myself the king of nasty. Some of the before pictures of those flips were just disgusting, you know.
Yep.
Mushrooms and grass growing on the carpet and mold and, you know, hoarders and, you know, there's a dead squirrel in there somewhere. Cat lady, you know, it's just disgusting. It's fire damage. So it's just enough. Like, so I sold all my rentals, you know, that didn't give me any joy. You know, I now still continue in the new construction and development, but I delegate the stuff that I don't want to do. So now I kind of just did a personal review of what makes you happy. Like, you know, it's kind of cliche, what's your why?
Yeah.
You know, in 2001, when I started, nobody was talking about why. Like, I just want to get rich was kind of my why, which, as it turns out, is a pretty crummy why. So I realized, who am I? Well, I want to deal with new. I want to learn. I want to be fulfilled every day. Like, I want to create and be part of the creative things. You know, I always kind of say it was a down day for me whenever I actually got the keys to the new rental or the new flip, because now I had to execute and I didn't like the execute part. The fun part for me was over. So,
right. Okay,
well, realize who you are, what's your strengths and weaknesses, and kind of match your personality to the strategy. And so now I think like an investor, I'm the finder guy, put the deal together guy, and then you hand it off to your team. And so development, new construction lends itself really well to that, because it's your team that's going to do the back and forth with the city.
Yep.
When you're actually getting to the point where you're doing work on site, you're going to have professionals that deal with that, project managers, builders, general contractors. Let them do that.
Mm-hmm.
While you focus on the next project, kind of.
So you've kind of evolved into where you are sort of at the 30,000 foot view of where's the land that we're going to acquire, what are we going to build here, and then you got a team operationally kind of behind you.
Yeah, like, you know, and I should have done that. I was lone wolf guy all my career. I had to kind of do everything. And now I've really learned the power of focus we just talked about, but also the power of having an operational partner. Like, I should have had somebody that was doing the, okay, now you take it from here. Once we get the keys, I'll go work on the next one.
Yep.
And that would have been a lot better, but you know, you got to kind of go through that too and figure out everything yourself. So, you know, there's kind of 3 parts to any real estate thing. There's the finding part, the funding, and then the operations, whether it's renovating that apartment or, you know, building some houses. Which one of those 3 are you?
Yeah,
and we try, a lot of us try to, actually what I find with most investors, okay, I can find stuff and I can do it, but I'm not good at the money. Hey, don't sell yourself short. Lottos are better at finding money than we think. But, you know, which one of those three do you really want to focus on? And then either get a partner or delegate or hire people to do the part you're not necessarily good at. So, yeah, so that's kind of been some growth and realization personally over the years.
It's funny. I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs, which clearly you are, we're not good at the operations. We're good at the at figuring it out, you know, kind of unlocking the model, and then and even finding and uncovering deals and opportunities. But like executions, like give that to somebody else to do. I don't have the patience for it.
I like the beginning. I don't like the middle, and then I like the end where you can stand back and, you know, watch your project with pride. I like that bit. But yeah.
Yep. I'm with you on that. So what did that look like then in terms of development for you? You started developing in Canada first, and were those inner city lots that you were buying and teardowns, or how did you start in the development world?
So yeah, so like I said, so I had a flip, and then I was just going to flip it. The person next to me passed away, so I'm, you know, talking over the fence with the son, and he says, you know, would you want to buy it? So I bought it too. I was going to flip them both, and then I said, you know, I got my first real estate book given to me when I was 15, which is over 40 years ago, and so. I've done all the investigation into all the different strategies. You know, I wouldn't mind building. What's that like? You know, God protects the naive and the stupid, as they say. So I didn't know what I didn't know. So I actually moved off those two houses. I didn't even have to demolish them. They were still in relatively good shape. Actually, funny story. So a guy came up to me and he said, I'll pay you $4,000 each for those two houses. I said, what? He said, yeah, I'll move them off. I'll take care of all of that, but I'll pay you $4,000. Well, I budgeted. I got some quotes. It was going to cost me $8,000 to demolish those two houses and throw them in the dump. So now there's a $16,000 positive swing. Perfect. Let's go.
Wow.
Day comes, you know, the moving company, and it's fascinating how they move stuff. It's really cool to watch. Anyway, at the end of the day, the owner of the moving company comes up to me and he says, you know, I'd have bought those both off you for $15,000 each. I said, what? He said, yeah, this guy, he goes to City Hall every week. He pulls the list of demolition permits, and then he goes, talks to the owners, and he buys them for $4,000, sells them to me for 15. Next time, skip the middleman. Said, okay, whatever. So I could have made $30,000 instead of $8,000, but whatever. So less than that. So anyway, so I moved those off. I split the two lots into four. And what's great about development is you've got all these entry and exit points. So I could have just torn everything down and sold the lots then to another builder, whatever, made a profit there. I could have split the lots into four, sold it then. I could have put the pipes in the ground, sold it then. But I took it all the way and actually built four new homes. And I really liked that. So that was the genesis. The next week, you know, I'm at my parents' house and they're living in one of these kind of 50 plus bungalow villa kind of things. Right? So I can kind of do this. So I started looking for land. I found about 7 acres of land. I rezoned it. I changed the density. At that point, I was offered an actual $400,000 profit just for kind of not even doing any work on site. People ask me if I were to do that today, what would I do? And I'd say I'd take that $400,000 and run that crazy.
Right. Yeah.
But no, I got it. So I stripped and graded the land. You know, we did the trenches and put the utility pipes in the ground and built the internal road. And then I actually built 36 bungalow villas as well, too.
Wow.
So, my dad and I had built my personal residence, and then I did the four units, and then I did 36. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend that as a trajectory of
how to get in. You scaled up real fast, man. You
scaled up real quick, yeah. And then you get caught in the, you know, various recessions, whatever, and so the hair grows white. But so that taught me in and out quick. Like kind of do one of those three. Do the permitting bit, the pipe in the ground bit, or the building the homes bit.
Yeah.
And in and out quick. Because stuff, you know, governments change, governments policy change, interest rates change. So
yeah. That's the thing about major development is that it does take a while. One, it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of time in a lot of cases. We've built subdivisions before and you're just holding your breath as you're past like the 1 year mark. You're like, oh, I'm still developing this thing. And it's like you said, a lot can change in a year. You know, new political office and they change the way things are done, or just the economy in general, or interest rates change and appetites change. It's just like development. I feel like developers, you know, at least the big land developers, I feel like they make a lot of money, but then they also go out of business. What do you think about just development, like large development in general?
So again, I stay away from that. So what I try, you know, as I'm talking to people, most people don't even think developments can be done at all. Like that's just for the big boys on the outskirts of town building 1,000 tract homes. That's not me. Or they think it's has to be subdivision creation or land development. And there's lots of what I call micro strategies in this world of land development, new construction that you can get in. So regular size investors can actually get on in on this too, right? So like I said, with my two homes and I built four, you know, just changing zoning and density, you can exit at that point, or knock down the house and kind of clear things up, exit at that point, put the pipe in the ground. Now you've got service lots, you know, so potentially I could have sold those to four individual young couples that wanted to build their own house and live in that area, right? So it doesn't always have to be outskirts of town. You can bring it back into a vacant lot. You know, there's already the existing utilities and everything are right in the front street, mature trees, you know, so we're not just continually with the urban sprawl. And so, and then we can also, you know, knock down old house and build a fourplex, you know, so to help the housing crisis, but also once we've built that fourplex, lots of exit strategies, right? We can keep it, refinance it, potentially pull out the money, just like a BRRRR. I call it a BRRRR. So you buy, build, rent, and refinance and repeat. So, there's that, you know, I can condominiumize those four and sell four individually. I can sell the now new fourplex to another multifamily investor that, you know, it's really tough to find multifamily now. So now somebody else could come in and buy that. You know, I could potentially set it up as an Airbnb or rent to own. I can, in some areas, you know, let's say that fourplex is two side by side, two story duplexes with a suited basements. You know, some areas of the countries you can do basements. Mm-hmm. Well, I can sell half to a young couple that'll live upstairs and they've got a mortgage helper in the basement. And then same thing on the other side, right? So there's all these different strategies that land development helps us get into it. So I always call it tools in the toolbox. So let's say right now I know how to do, you know, long-term rental, short-term rental, flips, Airbnb, and wholesaling, right? I got like four or five tools.
Yep.
I've just listed another, you know, 10 or 12 tools in your toolbox because there's all these different entry points and all these different exit points that small to mid-sized investors can get into. So, and even in development, like I'm doing a project in Houston. I just want to do, I don't know, if I grew up on a farm, so I don't know if it's, I like dirt or what, but I'm just doing the dirt in the ground, create the service lots, and then I'll sell the lots to builders and they can worry about building. Well, 3 or 4 months for kind of due diligence, 5 or 6 months for permitting and design. There's a bit of an overlap there. And then depending on the size, you know, you're kind of 8 or 10 months to physically do the work. So potentially you can be in and out in a year and a half, 20 months kind of thing, right? And so even within that, it only has to be a 5-year project. If we want it to be a 5-year project, there's ways for us to get in and out quick, is something you'll hear me say all the time.
Yeah.
Lots of opportunities.
Yep. Yep. Well, it's funny. We have a nationwide network of franchisees through Red Barn Homebuyers, and a lot of them get leads, especially early on. They get leads, and in the nature of generating leads, you see everything, right? You get a little bit of everything, and it's funny how many of them complain when they get a land lead. They're like, "This is a land lead. What am I supposed to do with this?" And I'm like, "Are you kidding me? There's so many things you can do with a land lead. There's so much opportunity there. Don't throw that lead out for all the reasons you just laid out. I mean, at the very least, just wholesale it to somebody else, even if you don't want to do anything with it."
So it's funny, like, you know, I've been watching this for 40 years. And like I said, we're always taught flips and rentals and that. We're taught that the value is in the building. We get rich by adding value to the building. We need a building. And we don't want the building to be too nasty, right? We just want a building that's, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, needs some paint, needs some flooring, some new fixtures. And, you know, if it's too nasty, we don't know what to do with it. Or if it's raw land, we don't know what to do with it. But if we teach ourselves what you can do with a vacant lot, even that wholesaler, if you just like change the zoning or density or kind of improve what you can do with that lot and create, and, you know, change usage or get a relaxation on height so somebody can build higher, if you add value to it, well, now you've added another zero onto your finder's fee check just by you know, a few months at City Hall doing some stuff. And, you know, so yeah, there's, if you basically, what I'm doing basically is kind of helping people figure out how to profit from land, whether it's 40 acres on the outskirts of town or an old vacant lot inside. And here's the other thing too, about those really nasty teardowns, the 1910. Yeah, that's too disgusting. I don't know how to flip that. I'll go on to the next one. Well, if you tear down an old thing, well, then you got a vacant lot. And we've been talking about what you can do with a vacant lot, right? So it's not rocket science. This is stuff that average investors can get into.
You know, talking about going to City Hall, I think maybe for a lot of new investors, that's maybe the what's intimidating is just not knowing. Like, I don't know anything about, you know, how to rezone or subdivide. And maybe it feels more daunting than it actually is. Maybe talk about even your early experiences, just figure, because you kind of had to figure that out. Well, you know, how do I get this thing rezoned? How do I subdivide it? How do I extract value out of this land?
So a couple of things. Your team's going to do that, right? We kind of think, again, because we're used to this flipping model, renovation model, I can't half finish a flip and expect to sell it for a profit. I can't half finish a reno and expect somebody to live there. I got to finish. But like, you know, with this world, every building starts with grass. You got to do all this stuff. And like I said, we don't have to do the whole thing, right? So if we kind of spend our time finding and putting the deal together, our team, our architect, our civil engineer, our planner, whatever, they're going to do the back and forth with the city. We have to understand it in general, but they're going to do the work. And then when you actually get, if you're going to do some of these micro strategies where you're doing work on site, well, you're going to hire a general contractor, a builder, whoever, to do whatever you're kind of doing. So it doesn't have to be that hard. And the other part about that is too, is this is a big deal geographically where you're going to invest. Kind of with flips and rentals, I can pretty much do that anywhere. In this world, I need to really focus on where I'm going to invest first. So, you know, I know we're all kind of wired. I just want to go find something on MLS. We got to take a step back, learn some stuff. What is zoning and density? What's highest and best use? How do you increase the value of land? But also, where am I going to invest? Some places will approve your permit in 2 months. Some places will take 2 years and everything in between. Well, if it's going to take more than a year, let's say, then don't invest there. Let's go find somewhere else. You know, some places are really pro-development. They want new housing, especially with the housing crisis. Some are really pushing it. There's government incentives and rebates and tax cuts and everything to kind of incentivize that. Other places are just anti-development. Like, you're the enemy. We don't want you there. Well, then don't be there.
Yeah.
What does the area want to need? So we got to kind of focus on geography. It may be that where you physically live and where you want to invest, maybe that place does suck. Like, so let's, but literally across the highway in another county or 30 minutes up the road in another city, life could be totally different, right? So that's a big, if you've heard horror stories about development, it's probably because the people were just in a bad municipality or jurisdiction.
Yep. Yep. And you're exactly right. And we've experienced that over the years. Some municipalities just aren't worth the time and effort because, like you said, why are they so obstructionist about everything versus go find one that's friendlier, that clearly wants the development?
Yeah. Let me say one more thing. So a friend of mine is in Houston as well, and he's doing just that. So he found an acre of land on MLS, talked to the neighbor, bought that one too. He's got 2 acres. He platted that or subdivided that into 32 individual lots to build 32 individual townhouses. The buying and the platting part took 5 weeks in Houston, right? So, and then he's physically building the units themselves, in and out, actually selling everything 20 months is his projection. $70,000 profit per unit is kind of the projection.
That's incredible, man.
So in and out in less than 2 years. So, wow. You know, where you are is a big deal.
That's lightning fast. I'm curious where, for you, how are you sourcing opportunities now? Have you been more of an off-market sourcing opportunities? Are you just on the MLS? Where are you finding your deals?
A couple of things. So when you're dealing with land, obviously there's not a lot of big tracts of land in any of the major cities left. So you are kind of on the outskirts. So how do we find those? You know, typically off-market, you know, prop stream and land brokers and these kind of people. If you're going to do knock down old house, build fourplex, or find inner city lot, build fourplex. I'm real big on being proactive, so not waiting for the realtors to come. So kind of what I really focus on is zoning maps. So a zoning map is kind of a color-coded map of each individual lot in a city and what you can do with it right now. And in these older neighborhoods, because again, I'm looking for kind of teardowns. So again, this is a great way to separate yourself from the competition. Everybody's kind of going for that 1960s or 1970s house that we can renovate. What if you focus on the nasty? Separates yourself a lot. Anyway, so I'm looking for things 1950s and earlier. Some of those neighborhoods, they're actually in redevelopment, and the city and the community are working together to put together a redevelopment plan, right? They'll do their 2 years of open houses and that kind of stuff, but they'll come up with, again, a kind of a redevelopment plan. So again, there's a map there. So now we the zoning map tells us what's there now, and the redevelopment plan will tell us what the future, what they want it to be, right? So maybe on this individual street, it's currently zoned single family home, but the city wants that to be, you know, three-story walk-ups, or they want it to be side-by-side townhouses or row houses, whatever you call them. And so most of your fellow investors don't know that. They, you know, I've been going to monthly meetups for years. You rarely heard the word zoning ever. So that gives you power. That those buildings on that street have more value to me than two blocks over, right? Because I know I can do more with that. And that allows me to be proactive. Now I know I can either tell my realtor to flag any time something comes up on that house, or I can do door knocking, or I can put flyers in mailbox instead of just kind of flooding the entire neighborhood. I can be specific and more targeted on my approach. And now it's, you know, even with wholesaling, you know, I need a building that's in trouble and I need a person that's in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to send out a flyer to the neighborhood, you know, I'll buy your home 50 cents on the dollar. And you get lots of nasty calls, you bastard, blah, blah. But in this world, I don't have to have the buyer in trouble. I can go to them and say, you know, I'd like to buy your house. Fair market value is X. If I can get you that money, would you give me time? I need 10 months to do permits and changes, whatever I want, right? So it's an entirely different conversation again for those wholesalers out there. It's not just this always kind of fighting and trying to steal people's houses, right? Yeah. So that's how I would suggest going about finding stuff is get really good at kind of understanding zoning and becoming a community expert.
Yeah.
You know, so here's a city that's in general pro-development, different communities. Well, I'm looking for stuff 1950s and earlier stuff where there's already the NIMBY crowd isn't winning, where there's already people doing some stuff. There's precedent there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is an area that I can work with. Let's become, and you know, so now I understand the zoning of that area. When council makes a change to zoning, I know how that affects me, and I, you know, that allows different opportunities to come up. Mm-hmm. So again, be kind of focused and specialized really helps.
No, I think that makes a ton of sense. And like you said, most of this stuff is published probably on the municipality's website, yeah. Future land use map, or even the current zoning map. You know, I've talked to our zoning department multiple times, and sort of their threshold for being interested in rezoning something is if it touches a zoning. So, you know, if I'm looking at a residential, but I know next door is commercial, well, then the fact that it touches on one of the corners gives me an opportunity to potentially, you know, rezone it. And it doesn't take a lot of work online to figure out who are the people that have these properties that touch a different zoning that you might want to get. And with the tools that are online, I mean, for 15 cents, less than that, 5 cents, you can skip trace these people and just put a call into them. I mean, it's just direct outreach. But like you said, going a little step farther than most other investors can give you a huge leg up in this space.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is most municipalities want higher density on high traffic roads, right?
Yes.
Because even the NIMBY crowd says, okay, well, I don't care what you do on the main street. Just don't touch my little utopia that I've lived in here.
Right.
So the city's looking for increased density. Perfect. They're all over that. So typically, you know, anything on a main street can be easily upzoned to higher density and greater inventory as well.
Yep. Yep. So let's talk for a second about somebody that's new, that's thinking about this. They're like, hey, I'm interested, but you know, I'm not sure I've got the money or the, you know, financial capacity to do this. What would you tell somebody that's wanting to get started in terms of financing a deal like this?
So everything you've learned about joint ventures, that all still works here. Perfect. But I think we have more opportunities here than in most other, like the flip and rental world. In the flip and rental world, I need the seller to leave, because I'm going to renovate their place, right? So I'm limited to maybe a second mortgage, vendor take back, agreement mm-hmm. for sale kind of thing. Here, you know, I talk about 11 different ways to potentially partner with the seller, because I want them to stay. If I'm going to take 10 to 12 months to get whatever permits I need to, you know, I'd rather them stay there, keep cutting the grass, paying the insurance, instead of having to worry about a tenant for 10 months kind of thing. So, and again, so can you talk to the seller? And, you know, again, if I can get you this much, would you give me 10 months to do what I need to do at the end of that time? So what happens there is I don't have to buy the house. So everything in my area now is $600,000 or $700,000. I can't afford everything. Well, if you don't have to buy the old house, perfect. Now my costs are just city permits and fees, some engineering, architecture, whatever, who's ever doing my work down at the city. At the end, you know, the builder, typically, or the new buyer, is going to pay buddy his sales fee, he and I work out some kind of split. So that's, again, just one of the 11 ways I kind of talk about of how to do that. If you can do that, and if you do kind of these paperwork only entitlement stuff where you're not physically doing work on site, then your costs can be pretty low. Like I said, just permits and fees and some engineering. And so that allows a lot of people to get into this, wholesalers specifically. Like, that's a real new opportunity for that. If you do have to buy the old house, then the costs are pretty much the same as, you know, I say, if you can afford that house for a flip or a rental, you can afford to do this. The costs are pretty much the same. And then if you're actually going to tear the house down and build new and all that, then the costs go up from there. But there's these different opportunities. And even on land, like, you know, I've got a YouTube channel, but a couple of months ago, I did a creative ways to do subdivisions and land. One way, for example, you know, I'm working with a group here that, you know, so they're looking at about 250 acres of land, and they're going to split it up into 2 and 3 acre executive lots. House on it now, I can buy the whole thing for $850,000 today. But they're looking at a 3-year phased plan, so that the owner is going to get a little bit now, more after year one, where they've actually sold some stuff, because they're not coming cash out of pocket. They're actually paying, you know, out of profits and sales proceeds, some more out of year two, some more out of year three. The owner will actually end up probably making about $1.3 million instead of $850,000.
Wow.
Benefit to him, obviously. Benefit to the group that's doing it is in that they don't have to come up with all the cash to buy, right? So you can self-fund to a great degree, and your cash requirements are much less. So again, different ways. If you think about the world differently, there's different ways to get into this.
I like that idea a lot of partnering with the seller and knocking on somebody's door and talking to them about how they can make more on their house rather than trying to buy it at 60 cents on the dollar. That does open up so many, especially in this market where things are tight. It opens up so much more potential.
And sellers are getting smarter. Like, they know, like, you know, you're looking at, let's say, a 65-year-old couple. They've been there for 30 years. They bought the house for $30,000. Now it's worth $800,000. They know they're going to get paid. They're not stupid. But they've also seen other people come in and develop stuff. And you know, dad's a little greedy. You want some of that too.
Yeah.
Typically that manifests itself. Okay, here's fair market value. I'm going to ask for this. And then the house sits for 6 months because nobody wants to buy it. So, but if you can work out a deal potentially with that, again, now you don't have to buy that house. And dad wants to do this, but he doesn't know how, and he's old and he's scared. And so if you can come in and say, you know, I'll take care of all the rest of this bit.
Yep.
Just, you know, you keep sitting on your porch and cutting the grass, and we'll be fine.
Well, and paying insurance and all the things you don't want to have to do. It would be fantastic if they continue to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, if he moves out, now I got carrying costs, or I got to get a renter in short term or whatever. Yeah. So it's a bunch of hassle. So how do you kind of work? Like I said, there's a lot more opportunities in this world than the typical flipper rental world.
They really are. It's just like you said, just educating yourself, right? Getting up to speed on how this works. And I do feel like, you know, you and I were talking before we jumped on, what an untapped area this is. So many investors are looking at all the other strategies out there, and they're good, viable strategies. But to me, we've sort of found ourselves, and I talk about this in the podcast, we do a lot of land development here in Atlanta for a lot of the same strategies you're talking about. And there's a lot more that you employ. But again, to me, this is where there's a lot of opportunity that people aren't really discussing. They're not delving into. So somebody's listening to this and they're like, Darcy, I'm interested in what you're selling. This sounds very intriguing to me. Where would you send them? Where could they learn more about what you're doing? I know you'd mentioned you had a course out there.
I've got a course. My website is darcymarlow.com. You can go there. I've got YouTube videos. I put out a YouTube video on this specific topic, like just development and new construction and lawn assembly and land severance and this world. So there's not a lot out there, but it's just go to YouTube and look up Darcy Marlow channel. You'll get there too. And then, the course is, it's a really objectively a really good course. So it's 15 hours of video, but you can get up to speed in about 3 or 4 hours. You got to learn some new stuff, right? So we got to learn, like I said, what's zoning and density and usage, and how do you profit from that? And what is highest and best use? What does that mean? We hear it all the time, but, you know, and then how do we increase the value of land? Because we're taught the values in the building more and more, you know, let me give you a fact here. So across North America, the average lifespan of a wooden structure is only 70 years. Brick is 90. So it's not like Europe where a lot of things last forever. So that's 1954 and 1934 respectively. So why are we fixing up you know, I was talking to somebody the other day from Philadelphia. He's working on an 1880 building and it's kicking his ass. And I said, why are you renovating it? Tear it down. Like, let's tear this stuff down.
Yeah.
Let's revitalize. Let's, you know, come back with higher density, help the housing crisis.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so I teach basically all that and then geographically where to go and all the steps, you know, as I said, start with grass and whatever you want to do. If you just want to do the paperwork only bit, you know, make $50,000 profit and do it a couple, two or three times a year just by changing zoning density, do that.
Yep.
Like me, you want to put pipe in the ground, sell to builders, do that. If you actually get a thrill out of actually building the fourplex, you know, do that. So we teach all that. We've got a library of like 50 spreadsheets and sample contracts and white papers and all this stuff. And then we've got an amazing Facebook group community of all the existing students. So, you know, you've got a question, throw it in the group. If somebody else doesn't answer, I'll answer in 24 hours. You can email me directly. So it's just, if you're into this, if you're tired of flips and rentals and toilets and endless renovations and the churn of trying to find the next flip or wholesaling, you want an extra zero at the end, like this is a good world for you. So yeah, get in touch and we'll figure out how to get you involved.
Awesome. Darcy, I think this is super valuable. Again, folks, darcymarler.com. He's got a course there. He's also got a YouTube channel. Check that out. Really enjoy today's chat with you, Darcy. Good stuff. Hopefully people listen and employ these strategies and check you out.
We're all looking after the same property. There's massive competition. Let's do it differently. Let's play in a different sandbox. Let's look for the crap. Let's look for the vacant lots instead of driving past them. So.
Exactly. Don't ignore those land leads. There's value there.
Thank you so much.
You too. Take care, man. Kevin, did you enjoy that interview or what?
Man, that was so good.
Wasn't it?
I really appreciate that. That was fantastic stuff.
Does it fit the book title? I've already forgotten the book title.
Do less, make more.
Make more, be happy. it does, right? You know, he's pivoted now to where he's just doing fewer developments. And he's figured out how to make money developments. I mean, you know, flips can be hard right now. Cash flow is hard to come by these days. And it's just like, you know, we've got a new construction business. Doesn't take a lot of deals to make a lot of money in new construction or land development. You got to have the know-how. So I appreciate the fact that he's teaching people how to do it. I think it's a really good segment of real estate to get into.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, it was every bit as entertaining as seeing Mr. Darcy on the stage for the theater. Actually, this was quite a bit more valuable. I feel like I got more out of it than seeing Pride and Prejudice at the theater.
Pride and Prejudice maybe was more entertaining. Maybe this was more valuable. Maybe that's what you're trying to say.
Maybe.
I guess you were with your wife, so that's valuable.
I did. That was the best part of it.
That was the value.
That was the value. But this was pretty phenomenal. This was good stuff.
Hey, Kevin, how about we do this next week?
Let's do it. And you can tell us how it went with the boat. Find out if your kids have dropped the rope yet.
I'll start the first chapter of the book. And I'll let you read it and give me some feedback.
All right. Call it a date.
See you, man. Friends, thanks so much for making it all the way to the end of today's podcast. If you or possibly a friend has any interest in learning more about real estate investing or opportunities with Red Barn Homebuyers, take a minute and head on over to redbarnhomes.com and check out our investors page or our franchise page, or just drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you. Can't wait to see you on the next episode of The Deal Farm. Hey friends, just a final thought before you check out. You know, so many of us are going 100 miles an hour through life. We're weighed down by stress or worry or even that haunting feeling of emptiness. But it doesn't have to be that way. I've actually put together a quick resource at faithcrossroad.com where I share just a little bit about the faith that gives me hope and purpose and identity, and I'd love to share it with you. Again, faithcrossroad.com.